when Emmett Till was accused of accosting her, then shot, caught a soul.
I wasn't doing nothing. Nothing. But I could tell by the way he was looking at me, it was going to be bad.
The all-too-true story of a black youth pulled over and then murdered by a cop whose guilt consumes him. That's two plays by Gloria J. Brown Marshall on the WBAI Playhouse Saturday at 7 p.m. right here on WBAI New York.
And the previous program was Neurodiversity Experts Talk with Natalie Tandyway, and that is heard Fridays at 2 p.m. Stay tuned for Ecologic. That's coming up. Stay tuned.
Clean air and clean water are healthy air and water. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for April 16th, 2021. Whoa.
When your air and water is clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Humor is one of the most effective ways to educate and activate.
Our guest is syndicated political cartoonist Andy Singer.
Thanks for joining us, Andy.
It's nice to be on your show.
So were you one of those kids that was always drawing all the time?
Yeah, I mean, definitely since I was a little kid, I liked drawing. I was an only kid, so it was sort of like amuse yourself. You don't have brothers and sisters or people necessarily, so I got into things like drawing or stuff that you could do by yourself.
Well, then how did you end up being a political cartoonist? There's an awful lot of places that an artist can, with your talent could go.
I just stumbled into it. I was a painting major in college, painting and art history, And I liked cartoons, but I never really thought that that's what I would do. And I moved out to California, and I was trying to get illustration work, and a bunch of people were like, oh, you should draw cartoons. And the Daily Californian, which was a paper of the University of California, Berkeley, had an election for columnists and cartoonists, and I drew a bunch of things and entered it, and I got the job. That was it. And then I discovered I liked it a lot.
How many places are you syndicated in?
Very few anymore. At my peak, which would have been in like the mid-2000s, I was in 24 papers, which sounds like
a lot.
But it's not. When each one's only paying you like 10 bucks or something or 15 bucks, it's not very much money.
oh, my goodness.
But you're competing with, you know, syndicates – will sell cartoons to daily newspapers for as little as $2 a cartoon. So that's what you're competing with as a freelancer. But these days, a lot of the papers, my market was alternative news weeklies like the Village – I never ran in the Village Voice, but papers like the Village Voice that were all around the U.S. They were part of a consortium called the Association of Alternative News Weeklies. And – I ran in a bunch of them, and many of the ones that I ran in aren't there anymore. The funny times. Yeah.
I've been reading you in Funny Times for years, and look forward to each cartoon. And talk about, you know, when an issue comes up, or you've cartooned about pretty much every political and social issue there is. So how do you choose what to say and how to say it?
I don't know. I get maybe emotionally involved or something, and then I have to draw something about that in order to get it off my chest. I think that I draw cartoons the way other people take photographs or the way writers write about stuff. It's just a way that I have of digesting the world. So whatever happens to be going on that I'm obsessed with at that moment, you know, I'll make a cartoon about it.
Now, we have a lot of cartoons on our website, ecoradio.org, and I think one of my favorites has got to be The Maze. You deal with so many environmental issues in that one cartoon. There's, you know, you say a picture is 1,000 words. That's thousands and thousands of words in that picture.
Right on. Yeah, I mean, I like – you look at the explosion of meme culture, right, on social media. And memes are cartoons. I mean, they're just cartoons that anyone can make because you take a bunch of photographs and – you can put words with them and have this verbal visual shorthand, and it's a great thing. And that particular cartoon, there are a bunch of environmental issues that drive me crazy at the moment. I'm supportive of so-called green technology, but everything's trying to claim that it's green technology, and in fact, it's not.
Let's go through that cartoon a little bit.
Sure. That's called greenwashing.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
I mean, this is radio.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So Lisa starts at the top.
That cartoon, I get frustrated at the plastics industry, for example. That's not at the top of it, but there's this idea of plastics recycling, which is largely a myth created by the plastics industry. And a lot of stuff, people don't realize that when you recycle plastic, say a one or two plastic, it gets knocked down a grade every time you recycle it. So eventually it ends up in landfills. And the idea that you can somehow, by recycling plastic, make it green is ludicrous to me. Other schemes are, I find people like Elon Musk, who drives me completely insane, is thinking, oh, you know, we'll just, I don't know what, send things into space. That will solve problems, you know. And so he sends an automobile, one of his own Tesla cars, to Mars, you know. It's like, oh, that's incredibly helpful. And sort of this idea of fleeing the planet, maybe, I don't know, like we've created all these environmental problems on Earth. Maybe if we flee to Mars, we can destroy it too. I don't know. But
there is no planet B.
Yeah. I was actually listening.
Sort of each of these things, you know, illustrated in a maze. And to me, the solution to the maze is we have to consume a lot less and focus on consumption reduction. And I'm
we're always talking about that.
What's that?
We're always talking about that.
Yeah. And my particular area of interest is transportation. I'm a co-chair of our local bicycle coalition, and you know, this myth of green automobiles is really frustrating, and I'm not, you know, totally against hybrids and electric vehicles, but the idea that they are going to solve the climate problem is ludicrous. And if we're not simultaneously reducing vehicle miles traveled and reducing consumption of cars and driving and stuff like that, we're not really going to get anywhere.
Yeah. You have to build all those new electric vehicles. They're going to take up just as much road space on the roads.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned nuclear power as a false solution, and there's so many.
Yeah, nuclear power is you're just substituting one horror for another horror.
Exactly.
And they were, you know, they're discussing this past week about what they're going to do with all this wastewater from Fukushima. That event happened like, you know, over 10 years ago, and they're still cleaning it up. They've put billions of dollars into trying to clean this thing up, and they haven't even succeeded yet in evacuating people and resettling people who used to live next to it. And imagine if that happened at Indian Point near New York City, or next to we have nuclear facilities near major cities in the United States, and you had to evacuate and find places for millions of people. It's just absolutely crazy.
And they're releasing the radioactive water into the ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Fish was already sketchy. Now the fish are going to be harmed, and the people eating them are going to be harmed.
Yeah, and we kind of view the ocean like a giant toilet or sewer system where we can just dump whatever we want, and it's gradually filling with plastic, and there are dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico because so much fertilizer stuff is coming out of, and God knows what else is coming out of the Mississippi or going down the Mississippi out into the Gulf of Mexico. And it's not an endless resource like everything else on the planet. Global warming in some ways is just kind of the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, go ahead, Sally.
Yeah, I like your Gulf of Mexico cartoon with the Mississippi. And bringing into it with really says exactly what you just said in so many words in one photo, in one cartoon.
Yeah, and that dead zone is hundreds and hundreds of miles. I mean, I think people think of a zone as a little tiny area. It's a huge area, and there's lots of them all over the world. And it's a very little discussed issue. I really was glad to see you did a cartoon about it, because you can say so much. And there's something about a drawing that is more comfortable to look at than us just talking about an environmental issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think any way that you can take these issues from being an intellectual thing and put it into people's guts, in a way, or make it more visual or urgent to them is for the better.
How do cartoons do that? Is it a left brain, right brain thing? What's going on?
Maybe I definitely think there's certain kinds of humor or things that short circuit your normal way of thinking convey a piece of information more succinctly than you could communicate it with just words or pictures alone. Like I say, the rise of meme culture in social media is an example. I will see memes from time to time that people have made of just like an image and a word or a couple of words, and they're incredibly effective or convey the illogic or the humor or some aspect of an issue much more potently and succinctly than if you were to explain that issue to people or you were to, I don't know, yeah.
I think that because cartoons are fun to look at, right? You just, people just enjoy looking at cartoons. They think, well, then how can they be serious? And I think people mistake solemn for serious. You can be serious without being solemn.
Right. Yeah, one of my favorite in music and other things, I like humor. You know, you think of various stand-up comedians like Richard Pryor or George Carlin or somebody who manages to convey a lot of truth, and it's somewhat couched in humor, humor is a great vehicle to try to convey ideas.
All the late night talk shows lately are hysterical, but they are actually where you can find truth about what's going on in the world.
Sometimes it seems you find more news there than you do on the actual news shows, and which have become crime of the day.
Yeah, it's true. There was Jon Stewart back in the day used to make fun of that, or lambast Fox News for, you know, why am I conveying information and you're not?
Yeah, John Oliver, you know, insists that he's not he's not doing news, he's doing comedy, but he's got more news, and he brings it across so well, again, using humor, because there's something about telling somebody and making them laugh at the same time that makes them remember it. And that is the joy of an Andy Singer or any cartoonist or any comedian. You remember what you say.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think remembering things, but I think also, like, when you're laughing, it kind of breaks down your resistance to whatever information it is that's being conveyed. And it makes it easier to appreciate it or understand it.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Now, your artistic influences, you seem to be influenced definitely by the classic undergrounds of the late 60s and early 70s, like Robert Crumb and Gilbert Shelton. Am I right?
My favorite cartoonist actually is somebody named Bernie Kleiben. Bernie Kleiben, B. Kleiben, I would say, influences pretty much any panel cartoonist who comes after him. Including Gary Larson, who kind of ripped off his way of drawing scientists and various other people, Dan Peraro, who does Bizarro, and various other, and myself, and lots of other people. Bernie Kleiben was a magazine cartoonist in the 60s and 70s. I think he drew stuff for various magazines, Playboy, and others, and he... did a book called Cat that was called Hell of a Nice Animal, frequently mistaken for a meatloaf. It's still in print.
Yeah, his cat cartoons. It was interesting because so many Playboy cartoons were sexual in nature, but not B. Kleiben's. You know, he was just funny. You know, now that you mention it, I definitely do see the Kleiben influence. That's kind of... not a name you hear that often.
I like Saul Steinberg also, who used to draw cartoons for The New Yorker. He did the famous New Yorker's View of the World.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
He was very good at communicating ideas, particularly philosophical ideas, in visual form.
And I guess that's what you're doing.
Trying.
You're conveying things in I know that one of my favorite cartoons is the oil spill cartoon.
The liquid oil spill, solid
yes.
oil spill.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
People don't realize that that, you know, oil spills, we think of them as just when a tanker goes down or something, but we're creating all this microplastic and large plastic, which is ending up in the oceans and actually coming back and ending up in our bloodstreams. And in a way, it's, you know, whether you take oil and make it into a plastic form, a solid form, or you leave it in its liquid form, either way, it doesn't break down. It's
right.
It's there forever.
Yeah, so you do the same drawing, one with a bird in the beach covered with black oil, and the other with plastic all over the place. It's again, you're conveying so much information in two pictures side by side. It's great. I could spend hours just sort of dissecting each one of your cartoons and letting the radio audience know what we've got, but we are running out of time. And I'm just wondering what the I guess we'll cover this in a for Environment TV, but the syndication process for cartoons, we're seeing fewer and fewer cartoonists, and I would imagine you can't make a living at it very well, can you?
No, it's really hard right now, I would say, to make a living at it. And part of it is that it was very much tied to old media and newspapers and the print industry, which is disappearing and being supplanted by online stuff, except that the online ad revenues haven't been able to pay for real journalism or real cartooning or anything. So it's difficult.
I'm sorry, guys, but they say time flies when you're having fun. We are having fun, but we are unfortunately out of time. So, Andy, would you please briefly give us your website and contact information?
Sure. My website is www.andysinger.com, andysinger.com, and there's my contact is on there. Or if, you know, somebody wants to email me.
Great. You can rely on Ecologic to bring you news of upcoming public events and people who are making a difference. This is a most important role for Ecologic and WBAI-FM.
And to listen to this show again and any of our past shows and get environmental news on a variety of topics, such as this Sunday's March to Save East River Park, go to www.ecoradio.com.
That's www.ecoradio.org.
Also, to find out when our shows are posted, those of you online, please sign up for our mailing list. Those of you on Facebook, like our page. Enter eco-logic.
And there's a lot of video and audio versions of Ecologic available to you for a donation to WBAI.
Go to www.give2wbai.org and choose Ecologic on the drop-down menu after you click on Next, or call 212-209-2950 and say you want to become a member or a WBAI buddy.
And of course, we would love you to become a member in the name of your favorite radio program, Ecologic.
And I should add that on Andy Singer's website, there are hundreds and hundreds of cartoons for you to enjoy of all different issues. And so check them out. And thank you to Reggie Johnson, our wonderful engineer. We couldn't do this without you.
And we thank everyone for supporting Ecologic by becoming a member or WBAI buddy in the name of our show. It really helps us and the station. It's a win-win.
I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. See you next Wednesday, April 21st at 6 p.m. for our Earth Week special. Our next Ecologic is in 2 weeks, April 30th at 2:30 p.m.
WPFW Washington and WBAI New York. I'm Askia Muhammad. Here's some headlines. A founding member of the Oath Keepers, arrested in the January 6th riot at the Capitol, pleaded guilty today and agreed to cooperate against others in the case. The first defendant to publicly flip in the sprawling domestic terrorism investigation that has led to charges against more than 410 people. The plea comes exactly 100 days after John Ryan Schaefer and hundreds of other supporters of former President Donald Trump allegedly stormed the Capitol, hoping to prevent Joe Biden from being confirmed as the next president. Prosecutors hope Schaefer's plea spurs others to provide additional evidence in hopes of avoiding long prison sentences. As the Capitol was overrun on January 6th, armed supporters of Trump were waiting in Virginia for orders to bring guns, a prosecutor said in federal court. The Justice Department has highlighted comments from some alleged riot participants who discussed being part of a, quote, quick reaction force, which stashed weapons. In a detention hearing for Kenneth Harrelson, accused of conspiring with other members of the Oath Keepers militia group to stop the certification of Biden's win, Assistant U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Nessler said the government has obtained cell phone and video evidence from the day before the riot supporting their contention. There are calls for justice in Chicago. After a video was released showing police shooting and killing 13-year-old Adam Toledo March 29th, officials had claimed the child had a gun in his hand and then he was killed, but the new footage suggests those claims are false. The video shows Toledo's hands were raised with no weapon and he complied with the officer's commands before he was shot in the chest. Last summer, 1 week after the killing of George Floyd, the D.C. National Guard intimidated protesters in the Capitol by flying helicopters 50 feet above the heads on the city streets. Now a redacted investigative army report into the incident not only condemned the flights as a misuse of medical aircraft, it also showed Guard troops celebrating their aggressive tactics, which witnesses said created a deafening noise and sent shards of glass through the air. The investigation reported by the Washington Post uncovered texts between Brigadier General Robert Ryan, who oversaw the controversial mission, and an unnamed subordinate on June 1st, who said to his boss in a text that night, quote, "Your helicopters are looking good." The general replied, "OMG. I am out here too. Incredible. I got special permission to launch. Full authorities." End quote. Four of the five helicopters were emblazoned with red crosses, meaning that they're meant to be used for medical transports. Minnesota Congressmember Betty McCollum has introduced legislation that would bar U.S. aid dollars to Israel from being used to suppress Palestinian rights and expand its illegal occupation of Palestinian land. McCollum told The Intercept, quote, "The $3.8 billion provided to Israel by the State Department has no country-specific conditions, despite Israel's systemic violations of Palestinian human rights." The bill is backed by Jewish groups including J Street, If Not Now, and Jewish Voice for Peace. Today is Emancipation Day in the District of Columbia, commemorating an 1862 act signed by President Abraham Lincoln, which abolished slavery in the district, freeing more than 3,000 enslaved people 8 months ahead of the Emancipation Proclamation. City government offices are closed, as are some city services, such as the Department of Motor Vehicles and COVID-19 testing sites. Currently in Washington, it's cloudy and 55 degrees. In New York, it's cloudy and 52. I'm Askia Muhammad. Thank you for listening to WPFW Washington and WBAI New York.